Hello, and welcome to the Second Funnies podcast. You are about to be listening to the wonderful stylings of Justin Worsham and Kevin Miller. Have fun, guys.
Well, thank you, Sam. Hello, and welcome to the Second Funnies podcast. This is episode 518. I am your host, Justin Worsham. With me, as always, is the one, the only, the one that makes a latte early. By that I mean it can never be a late latte. It can only be an early one because it is so delicious. The one, the only. This music is great. The KevinMiller.com. Jump and press the circle button, Kevin.
Thank you, Justin. The man that can slice bread with his toes can break bad while pulling weeds. Mm-hmm. He's the Veep of our Life's Too Short Life.
Okay. Are you naming off all the cable channels that you can't see anymore?
Wait, don't tell me.
You lost public radio? That was in your cable package?
Justin Worsham.
Guys, we need to do some kind of telethon to get Kevin an AM radio.
Can I have more? I don't think I hear anything coming through these
headphones. That might be your volume control on your headphones.
Hey, now I hear what you're hearing.
Hey.
Before that, it was much less volume. I want to play this song for everybody.
Okay.
Just to kick things off. I don't know why. Oh, there's more. Oh, I love it. This, I think, is going to set the tone for today's episode.
Okay, all right.
Recently, we watched this movie. Do you know this movie?
Despicable Me.
Did you know that because you know the song?
I can see your beautiful computer screen from right here.
Oh, it's like remix. This is sweet.
It's like the Casio I got for Christmas in 1989.
So, we recently watched this movie because my wife does not love animated features as much as I do. And like my idea of how to unwind is a Disney movie.
Yeah.
And she'll entertain them, but they're not as... she would rather watch like a chick flick, which probably shouldn't surprise you, or an action movie.
How is a Disney movie not a chick flick?
That's what I said, but whatever. So my...
Was that her response?
Kind of.
Because you won that argument.
If
if she just said, but whatever.
Let's get her in here. I keep looking. I feel like she knows every time I talk about it. I put on Despicable Me as like a...
icebreaker?
Yeah,
or
sort of a
middle
ground. Because I was like, I know you love this movie.
Right.
And it's very clever. I'm looking forward to the sequel because it's edgy.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things in it that are
really didn't do well in the box office, but it's done awesome in like DVD.
Yeah, and that's why they're making another one.
Yeah.
So in it is this great moment where she sings this song about unicorns, which is just that one line that the little girl is saying there, and then they've made this song around it. So then later I went to
it's one of the top selling alerts on the iPhone alert and ringtone.
Lie.
I'm not kidding.
Really?
Yeah, they're all sound bites from Agnes. No, not this. I think there is a unicorn aspect to it, like as a ringtone.
That's
but
hilarious.
The one where she, from the trailer, where she's like, it's so fluffy!
Yeah, we love that
one. You
can
get as a text alert.
We crack up. So so then I went to the Disney, or to the Universal backlot. I was meeting somebody there for coffee, and on the way out, I went by the store and got one of the little minions for my son for $10, because they're cheap there at the store. And so now he has his own little minion.
Is it the same as the inflatable one that you gave my kid that he popped?
Oh, that's right! I forgot I gave him that.
Yeah.
Where did I get that?
I think it came with the DVD.
Oh, it sure did.
Yeah.
That's right. This one, no, is a plushie. He's a little soft little minion, and we love it more than he does. We think it's hilarious. We make it talk to him. And
most of the toys you purchase your child, you will love more than he
will. We bought Sackboy for him. We thought it was awesome.
Yeah.
He makes out with it. He puts it on his mouth and goes to first base with it. So then 2 nights later, I had a kind of a tough day at work, and I was like, you know what? I want to go to the store and buy Wreck-It Ralph because I need it. I'm like, it's Disney animation. It's a video game movie.
Yeah.
It's like I saw it on my birthday because I've only seen it once since then. I would like to watch it.
Oh.
So we pop it in, and I'm like, you know what, honey? Thanks for what? I know these aren't your wheelhouse. And she's like, no kidding. I was like, oh. So we had a fight about that. And then, but then, so the next day, I come out and I'm baby proofing the house, and I put it on again for the second. I put it on 2 days
ago.
Kevin,
I got bad news for you. That baby already got in here, bro.
No! No, you can't get in. We're baby-proofed.
No.
Oh, come on.
No, I saw him like 40 times now.
That's an imagination.
He cried and laughed at me tonight.
Is it the same time?
Very emotional.
Poor baby.
Mostly when I either am loud or quiet.
No, I was doing that thing where I stopped them from putting their fingers in the electrical socket.
Oh, that's how you're going to get rid of them?
Yeah, that's the opposite. Anywho.
So there's an element of proofing like outside the house.
Yes, yeah.
And
yeah,
then
yeah.
There's a secondary level of like shocking them when they're in the house to get them out of the house.
Yes. Oh. So
I came out as being very anti-baby proofing, and I'm going to
Baby proof the house now.
I'm going to backpedal on
it. It's like waterproof or alcohol
proof.
Can
baby proof kill a toddler?
Yes.
Some
baby-proofs die always this time of year.
Wow. Remember when the time we did 15-year-old inside jokes? Yeah.
I think it was pretty solid. That one holds the test of time. So I tried to explain to her. She's like, why do you like this movie? I was like, it's a Disney animated film about video games. Like, how do I not watch this movie every day of my life? Like, it's everything I ever wanted into a film. So that one we started quoting because when little Sugar Rush Sarah Silverman says, I wrap myself in these candy wrappers like a little homeless lady. We think that is the funniest thing. And talk about an edgy movie. That movie is pretty dark. Like,
that movie is not for children.
Absolutely.
It looks like it's for children.
Yeah.
And the marketing team thinks it's for children. And here's how I know it's not for children. Yeah. My son loves video games. Did not appreciate that movie at all.
Really?
Because, and here, it took me a while to figure out, because Heath and I saw it on the road, and I was like, that was awesome. Yeah. I love it. It's because all of the video game references are from our generation.
Are they completely? Because you look at Heroes Duty, where the that's a current era video game.
Right. But it's in the vein of. It's not specifically, hey, I'm the guy from Call of Duty, because there are no characters like that. You know what I mean?
That's true.
They just kind of stand out. There's the, Solid Snake that maybe comes close, but like Q-Bert,
that stuff. It's all
the whole
Sonic.
Wreck-It Ralph game is a ripoff of Donkey Kong, so I think.
Well, it's great then.
And all the graphics, like the sheer joy that I think, I don't know, you tell me if I'm wrong, the sheer joy that I derived from watching that movie is the little tongue-in-cheek things about the animation of the games, but seeing them hyper-animated world.
Yeah.
So like all the people that live in the hotel,
the
way they can
like
only articulate in 90 degrees, there's always a twitch to make sure they don't look dead.
Because they only have a certain number of, but they do it in such a great way that
it's brilliantly animated, but that's the part that just makes me, all those little subtle things. Like Q-Bert's sign being in symbols.
Right.
And him having to figure out how to speak Q-Bertian. Like, oh my gosh.
It's pretty great. on the DVD or the Blu-ray, as I got, they have bonus things where they have three random commercials for the games from the era that the game would have been released in.
Oh.
And so for Wreck-It Ralph or Fix-It Felix Jr., they have... they talk about like state-of-the-art graphics. It's all this, and it's on a VHS, which is great. So it does like the cool like video and the blurring and the tracking and all that. And then at the end, they're like, you get two free quarters with your visit on your birthday. And then it jumps forward to Sugar Rush, which halfway through Wreck-It Ralph becomes a movie about candy and stops being a movie about video games. But and then the thing that I was like, oh, this is brilliant. They go new for 1997, Sugar Rush, and the commercial is in standard def. They take the time to make it 3:4 aspect ratio, and you can see it's like it's been up converted.
Yeah.
You can see the lines of something
space in between.
Yeah, of as if it was on a CTR or CRT monitor. I was like, that is an unnecessary amount of nerd detail to say, well, if we did the video in the 1980s style, we have to do the CRT standard def for the 1997 because that would have been accurate.
Yeah.
So they do that and they do the whole thing. And at the end, it's like, on your birthday, get four free quarters because it's gone up.
Yeah.
And then they do Heroes Duty, and that's in high def, and it looks like something that would be a current game and everything. And at the end, like, get a double power-up card on your birthday for 2012.
Oh, I love it.
Good old-fashioned.
It's interesting to think. I was just thinking while
we've got to get our buddy on here for that. Jeremy Costello was a production assistant on that.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
All right, we'll reach out to him.
We talked about that when the movie was released. I forgot about
crap.
That.
This is the second time we've discussed Wreck-It Ralph and still
I made Heath stay and watch the credits until I saw that. I go, oh, there he is.
Nice.
And,
You missed it. At the very end of the credits, the credits crash.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
there's a kill screen?
And it, like, glitches, and then there's all this line of code, and the Disney thing breaks half the screen, and then there's icon, and then it powers
That's great.
Off. Yeah, it's pretty
well
great.
Done. That it made me realize that there are listeners to this very podcast that were born after the times you're describing.
Oh, yeah.
That's only going to get worse for you.
That sugar rush.
At one point.
No, here's the thing. I want to. Oh, I'm so glad you said that, because I recently had some issues with that transition period was the future seems so crazy. Like there's going to be driving cars and Google glasses.
I know what you mean, but when you said driving cars, I was like, wait, all cars.
I'm sorry. Cars that drive themselves.
Yeah, I know.
In the next 5 years, there will be purchasable cars that drive themselves, that commercial grade.
Well, simmer down there, George Jetson.
No.
You really believe that?
I know that. Google has developed, they have the license to test these things on California streets and highways right now.
Right now.
Right now. They're in beta. With these devices, our friend—we
all know how that went.
We all,
beta, the beta tapes—they did not.
Oh, that's
go
true.
Well.
Well, this is a different kind of beta.
I'm sorry,
2.0.
Oh, the fighting fish.
Yes. Lou Vega, what?
He's got a Mambo number 5 in my
three,
car.
Four, 5. I don't get it. I'm too young.
Exactly.
I was 3.
Episode 518 brought to you by the 90s.
So yeah, they're testing these now, and so then later this year, Google Glass. Will come out with the camera that's inside the glasses, so you'll be able to Google and look and check your screen while you're walking around. And right, exactly. The future.
Can't wait
now.
For Oprah to make an episode about Google Glass and driving.
Oh, you could do both at once.
Yeah.
The future.
But my car drives itself, Oprah. Welcome to the future. It is now. Yeah, that's gonna be awesome.
Yeah, I can't wait. The
that's what I should do. This is a good idea. I should be the early adopter of joke writing. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I start writing the hacky jokes of tomorrow.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
That's actually very, very, very funny.
Really?
I am literally over the moon about that. You know who did that bit was M&M's back in 1998. They
really?
Said, we're M&M's. We're the candy of the new millennia. And then at the end of the commercial, they said, our plan is to do this millennial thing now before it gets super played out.
That's funny.
And sure enough, those of us who are around for the millennial, you could not hear the word millennial or 2000 without you open your eyes and you're like, I know it's the year 2000.
Can you imagine a kid born in the year 2001 and what he's like when he's 87 or you know what I mean?
I love it.
The fact that 2000.
Well, won't have to drive a car.
I was thinking about that, and tell me if I'm detracting you off because I don't necessarily want to, but I was thinking about that as I was playing.
But I do it incidentally.
No, I don't. Yeah, I don't mean to. But I've been playing Mass Effect 3, and it's funny, you fly around in the spaceship, and I start thinking, I'm like, there's going to be a time in our human history that this is going to happen, right?
That's exactly it.
And I go, I'm not going to be around for it. There's going to be whatever it is I think can happen in my lifetime. Intergalactic travel will not be that.
Intergalactic.
But there's a definite. And then I started thinking, and this is what made me laugh to myself, is I started thinking, well, okay, so intergalactic, what if it doesn't happen at all, though? What if it goes post-apocalyptic? Or what if it becomes that cactus becomes the new currency? And I'm like, Justin, all of your...
Were you high?
Yeah,
you...
No, I wish. No, I was thinking, but I did laugh to myself as if I was high, because what I realized is that the only possible future pathways
cactus.
of the future of the human race were all based on some movie I'd seen.
Right. That's it. Because that's the thing that challenged me and why I had this big shift, because I was like, oh, the future, I can't wrap my head around the possibilities. And then I realized a lot of my science fiction is grounded in the 80s of the possibilities of tomorrow, quite frankly, have become realities with the advents of cell phone and technology. Just our entire frame of mind of how we communicate and how we live life has shifted to a world that ideas of Star Trek and shows that were big back then are now second nature.
We'll go even further back. Remember those? They would always do those cartoons like the Tom and Jerry in the future.
They would
animate these things. And I remember there was some of the things had come true.
Yeah.
And some of the things had
always.
And I was just thinking while you're saying that, I wonder how many if now mm-hmm. we've completely washed it, like, because I feel like I haven't seen those lately.
Oh gosh, you should, the ones from the from like the 1940s and mm-hmm. early 50s where they talk about the world of tomorrow, like the Seattle Space Needle was built during the World's Fair.
Men in Black taught me that.
Yeah, that's right. And that was the New York one, but but they had a whole like Kitchen of Tomorrow, and you can watch these videos on YouTube, and it's like, you in the future will have a dishwasher.
Coffee will make itself.
Yeah, and it's like, so what I've realized is like to shift, because you've watched other movies from the 60s, like Fahrenheit 419, 462, I think something.
You're talking about the Michael Moore movie.
No, see, Michael Moore is doing a riff on the original Fahrenheit, and it's in the future, which is like 1994. Paper becomes, like, books become illegal, and mm-hmm. people aren't allowed to read books, and whatever the name of the movie is the burning point of paper. Mm-hmm. And so that it's a reference to like knowledge will become illegal and that sort of thing. But in that film, not the book, they have LCD flat screen televisions, which it's awesome. That you're like, that came real. But the killer is she wants to change the channel. She gets up out of her couch and hits the button on the wall because the idea of a remote control was so far removed from the cult. Like, it was beyond imagination.
Why would I need this? That wasn't seen as a problem. They were so happy with television that wasn't an issue.
The idea that televisions would be huge and panoramic.
Also,
like
there was only
screen.
Three channels. So right. It wasn't a bit, you would find the channel and just stay on it.
So now you fast forward to current, like that's almost 50 years ago. So now you think of what our paradigms are now of like, well, these are the, you know, of what has changed since then of like mm-hmm. a cell phone that is able to, or the internet, the extension of the human brain being across the entire cyberspace. And then to push yourself into that place of like, oh, I just suddenly became comfortable with the future again of like, this is, as those of us who like to be creative, this is a very exciting time where for the first time in probably 100 years, science fiction and imagination can take the next level. Like
right.
all the things that we've been thinking about are now pretty much possible.
Right. With the crummy Barbie for boys is now the number one box office film.
with the exception of interspace travel. But here's the thing. If money was no object for intergalactic travel or space travel, like we as a culture said, you know what we want to spend our money
that's
and resources
our number one,
on?
Yeah.
We could be doing intergalactic travel within our lifetime. We could be on the moon. You and I, 5-10 years from now, could be having this conversation on the moon if we as a culture said, okay, from here on forward.
That's what we want to do.
We have the technology and the ability is within reach.
We can build it faster.
we can make it stronger. But instead, oh man, Brian Gumbel has the, you know, a show that's on Thursday nights after all the comedies that are on NBC.
No.
It's like Rockefeller Plaza or something.
That's not Brian Gumbel, that's Brian Williams.
I'm sorry, who's Brian Gumbel?
Brian Gumbel is the black guy that does sports.
Not him.
Yeah.
Brian Williams.
And his other guy is, I think, on Good Morning America or something like that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So he had this great bit where they were talking about, he had this whole, this two-minute thing about this new car that developed a vacuum cleaner inside of the car so that you can detail on the go, anywhere, anytime. And at the end of it, he's like, so in the year 2013, we do not have a space, we do not have the ability to get into space, but we have a car that can detail itself.
Yeah.
In other news, yeah. I was like, yeah, you're right.
Do you ever watch The Soup with Joel McHale?
No. Did they put that on there?
No, he had one of the segments, the mini segments is, they say, Brian Williams, meow. It's a cat like that. And it's when he very plainly, nonchalantly says something incredibly catty.
Like, and it is. But I love him. I think he's great as a reporter. He's very funny. So bringing it back to games and what you said initially about 30 years ago, I suddenly realized after watching that movie, and I was talking to my wife about the history of video games, mm-hmm. is that you and I have the privilege of being first-generation gamers.
Yes.
I was like, I have played the very first home console game mm-hmm. on the very first home console, mm-hmm. I believe, because there were a lot of Pong ports and Pong mm-hmm. clones that were out, but the one I owned said Pong on the Atari cartridge, and I put that in my 2600, which is generally accepted as the beginning of the home console generation. And that's not everybody. And to think, like, Our media literacy has changed so much. You know, if you ever took a film class, the first one they show you is the very first
film. I have, Kevin. I've taken many a film class.
So what happened when they showed, what was the first film and what happened?
I don't remember.
Okay, so the first film is a trend.
I just wanted to be Scott Summers.
I know, I can feel it. The very first film that was ever filmed was based on a bet. Somebody wanted to, two gentlemen had a bet about whether or not.
It was Thomas Edison sending his assistant into the other room.
No, that's sound.
To call him.
That's sound. That's sound. They had a bet over whether or not a horse ever has all four of its hooves off the ground at the same time.
Oh.
So they were like, how can we do this? He's like, well, I'll set up a string of bullet time cameras on the track, and we'll take a bunch of pictures.
He matrixed.
Yeah, that's exactly it. He said, and I'll set it to sequence so that every camera goes off every foot or 2 feet or whatever the distance was, mm-hmm. and then we'll look and we'll just watch all, and then we'll have the horse trotted at even space, and we'll look at the photos and see if in any of them that the horse was ever off the ground completely. And so they literally flipped through them once the photos were done, and they found that it created this motion picture. So that's the idea of how a motion picture was born. Later, they were
responsible for the rebirth of the KKK.
More inside jokes. That's a professor of ours at San Jose State. So later, then they one of the first things they filmed was a train pulling into a station, right? So they filmed this whole thing. It's like 20 seconds worth of film footage. They bring people in. They're like, here's this technology. Here's this new thing I've discovered. Dim the lights, throw the camera up, and the train comes into the station.
Oh,
people
right.
ran
yeah,
out
I
of the building
yeah.
because they had zero media literacy for what was happening. They thought they were about to be run over by
a
train.
Yeah.
So that's the beginning. Now, to think of that, and then if you were
don't
a child.
Don't you wish there was like a litmus test? Because to me, I don't know. It's easy for me to say in the year 2013, but I just feel like, don't you think that it takes a special kind of dumb to
no.
get up and run out
no.
and see a train?
See, that's my whole point to the earlier conversation, is that your paradigm is so entrenched in this that you...
I would think of a remote
you
before
can,
getting
yeah,
up
exactly.
and touching
the LCD. You can't imagine it,
yeah.
because you've had a screen in front of you your entire life. My parents used to talk about a life before television. They're like, my dad would say, I actually kind of pity you because you don't know what it's like to not have that noise of a television,
yeah.
that existence of another person within your home. And really, he just didn't like that I watched a lot of television,
yeah.
and took the TV from him.
What are our things going to be? Like,
well, video games. Because
we used to
hold the internet.
A controller.
Yeah, exactly.
I remember when those Xbox people first said, you are the controller, and we laughed at them.
And the cars, you had to hold the steering wheel.
Oh, if I would have only bought Xbox stock then.
Google!
The PlayStation Move looked like a fancy disco flashlight.
So imagine if you're a child in that theater that watched the train roll in, and then by the end of your life, to be at a place where movie houses are all over the world, television are starting to show up in people's homes, and be like, to watch that complete change.
Yeah, you can have a movie theater in your home.
Yeah, to be like, that total arc of that medium. Like, that, it's kind of rare when you think about it in terms of the history of mediums.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them have been invented in the last 150 years.
Mm-hmm.
Before this, it was writing. That mm-hmm. was the big advancement. For the
had a good run. It had a
great.
Very good run.
And then there was printing, and then pictures.
And now they use it to make movies.
Right. So for you and I, first-generation gamers, we grew up with this. We are people that saw these films, or saw these games, rather, and they were a novelty and something dorky and fun for a while when mm-hmm. we were kids. But now they are a legitimate million-dollar industry, and they're only going to get bigger from here. Like, they're only going to keep evolving.
Was there a time when you were a kid that the fact that you played video games was associated with being dorky or nerdy?
It was something for children. That was for sure.
Right.
It was not an adult activity.
An adult activity.
It wasn't culturally like.
Yeah, because my father even said that he thought that the one thing he was always worried about when I was a kid growing up was the amount of time he let me play video games.
Yeah.
But he justifies that by the fact that I've been able to make money associated with that.
That seems fair.
Even though he says, well, you did those voiceovers for games, and so therefore it's fine. Dad, I made $800.
Games grew up with us.
Yeah.
Like, we are the generation that was initially playing things that were a little more than novelty.
Mm-hmm.
Pong, Pac-Man, like things that were really cool technological marvels.
In a very similar fashion to that documentary we saw about DC Comics, where there was a resurgence in the 70s, where it was the first time that people who read the comics were mm-hmm. now making them.
Right.
I kind of feel like we're kind of the maybe... maybe the sophomore class of that, where of guys that grew up with video games that are now making them. You know what I mean?
Oh, no, that's what I'm saying. We are the first generation.
But I'm saying there are guys that are maybe 5 to 10 years older than us that were the first ones to get a ColecoVision.
Yeah, I would say
that. You know what I mean?
We're still in that same generation.
Yeah, we're in the gap in the generation. That's what I'm saying. I feel like we're the second. If they're the seniors, then we've got to be the juniors or the sophomores.
It depends on how long. If generation is a generation, anybody that was under the age of 18 when the Atari was in their home and had the ability to play it would be in this generation.
Yeah.
And that's you and I. That's not...
We did it, man.
There it is. We were born before it was time.
Nailed it. Thanks, Mom and Dad.
Thanks for letting us be alive in the
70s. If it would have been like 8 years earlier, totally would have sucked.
Yeah, because we would have been Gen
Xers. We'd be like, I can't work this Kindle. Fire, who wants that?
I don't care about anything.
You know, it was really good, Led Zeppelin.
Seriously, though, the kids that are like 8 years older than us.
That's what
cool.
I'm wondering. Like, that to me is what
folks
that guy
in their
40s
is. Now?
Guys that are like 8 to 10 years older than us, instead of it being necessarily video games, it always seems to be more centered around music because that was kind of the thing
that's
for
true.
Entertainment. Like, that's kind of
their rock and roll.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. It'd be interesting to see, like, where that line in the sand is if you were 10 when Star Wars was in theaters versus when you were 15.
Yeah.
Where, like,
and you look at guys that are 10 years younger than us, and they all have profound,
right.
like, film and video game and television knowledge.
I'll say you have to be 12 years or younger at the point of the release of Pong and the home entertainment system.
Oh, I wasn't arguing your point.
I am.
Oh, okay.
Well, it's like Star Wars, because they're, you know, teenagers loved Star Wars. Gen mm-hmm. Xers loved Star Wars, but they're not the same people that's like us that saw them as a child watching with that... That wide out. I've sat on an airplane and put on Attack of the Clones on my laptop while flying and sitting next to some woman. And suddenly there's a rustling, and she gets up and trades seats with her grandson that was two rows back sitting with her parents because he wanted to watch silently Star Wars on my laptop. And they were like, great.
You don't carry a splitter? You can't hook this kid up?
I didn't know what was happening until it was over. And then I was like, oh, this, like, he's watching this mm-hmm. thing. And the parents had moved on and stuff. And I was like, cool. And then it was the scene where his mom dies.
Yeah.
And I was like, I got uncomfortable. I started to sweat a little. I'm like, are they okay that he's watching this?
Not
like,
your problem, bro.
Yeah, well, that's why I didn't offer
that's
the splitter.
That's why every time I sit in the middle seat, I turn on some porn.
Which they won't stop you. Not appropriate.
Don't fill my don't fill my aisle then. Daddy needs a window or an aisle. Otherwise, I get out. Butt sluts 18. That's what I do. No?
Is that a thing? I don't want to know. How much time we got?
Not enough. I think we got like 8.
Oh, 8 minutes?
Two.
I was going to say.
So 4 total.
I was like, I felt like I talked a lot more than that.
It was great, though. Well, here's... So, like, that's...
For recap.
Yeah, what you were just saying, though... Well, maybe not recap, but what you were just saying is... So, we know there's a new generation of Star Wars films that mm-hmm. are going to inspire this new generation of kids. You can also argue, like, what happened with Chris, I think was his name, one of the animators on
Sly. Yeah.
He saw the new Star Trek, and that's what made him want to be an animator.
Which hurts.
Right?
He's not that young.
He's not that young.
Late in the game.
No, but there's always going to be that buffer, like if you're right on that cusp, and I think that's what he is. And so there's going to be a child that is younger than my son.
Oh, yeah.
Who will experience these new Star Wars films with a different set of eyes.
Absolutely.
And then he'll... Like, there's going to be a generation that's going to grow up with this, say, new trilogy, and they're going to love them, and they're going
to
look at the originals,
them to go on to do
and they're
going to
go, these are garbage. Why would anybody watch these when you have this? Look at this.
Look at
the ships are flying around my face.
Google Glass.
Yeah.
Google Glass.
I saw the trilogy on my morning commute. Because
it was piped into my head.
I could sleep, and I could watch it at an accelerated rate. Because the screen can now keep up with the level of processing that my brain can handle.
It actually, I just remember watching it. I didn't actually see it.
Yeah.
It's like The Matrix, which is another movie no one's seen. The what always killed me along the same lines is the American Idol.
Mm-hmm.
So when you get down, I don't watch the show, but I remembered one season where I got some...
That was a test. You failed.
Fair enough. I somehow stumbled on it like it's the top 8, and then they ask these top 8 people a bunch of questions like, you know, what kind of music do you like, that kind of thing. So they were like, what artist inspired you? And half of them say, can you guess?
Batman.
you're the best person to play games with.
Because I'm the worst?
Yes. Kelly Clarkson.
What?
So they're like season 8 of the show, and they're like, the person that has inspired me is Kelly Clarkson. And I'm like, so, I mean, that's the fish eating itself.
Don't you want to, like, but at the same, I get what you're saying, but I really, don't you go to go, yeah, but has there been someone like that since her?
Yeah, no, for sure.
I mean,
that's my totally. But
so your inspiration is, I'm going to turn this show around.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to make it legit again.
I'm going to be the next Kelly Clarkson.
It had two runs.
Yeah,
half if you count Clay Aiken, because he was second place. And Ruben, where did he go? We don't know.
Yeah, oh yeah. Well, you and you're referencing season 3 there.
Yeah.
So I mean, it's had hundreds of
and
people.
And what's Carrie Underwood
that.
Four? Season four, season 5? Four.
Yeah, see, and that's what I'm saying. They're like on 11, 12. There are.
See, here's why, and it sucks to kind of, and I think I'm making this worse. But anyway, I like The Voice, so I watched the second season of The Voice, and now they're in a new season, and I'm already over it because the guy that won is a phenomenally talented dude, and I saw him do some amazing things, and nobody knows who he is, including myself. I want to say his name is Jermaine.
Yeah.
But
who cares?
I don't know.
Because it's just a game show, which is fine. But my point was to bring it up is that
it's the cycle.
It's the it's the generational.
If you're around long enough.
Yeah, then it's like so.
It's like nobody mentions Richard Hatch on Survivor anymore because they've been around for 13 years.
Yeah,
and there are people that grew up on the show at season 5 that are now able to participate.
Yeah,
they would watch it with their family and be 8, 10, somewhere around there.
And now are
and
doing
now
it.
They're playing. And
which
if
hurts.
They saw Richard Hatch, it would be the same. As meeting President Lincoln and having him be a vampire slayer,
which is real. Well, I love watching this thing on Brett Favre of how other players from the other teams after being creamed by him will run up and
get his autograph.
Get his autograph because they're like, I play football because I loved you as a kid.
That was the whole. That's funny that you brought that up because the whole time you're talking about this over this last week, and I was at San Antonio, no internet in the condo. All we had was cable, but they had the NFL Network, and I watched the 1996 NFC Championship game between the Dallas Cowboys and the Green Bay Packers, and it's interesting.
They went on to win the Super Bowl.
The Cowboys did.
Yeah.
So it was interesting to me because they had to bring in the edges of the screen because it was 4-3, and it's just funny that I remember watching NFL films from the 50s and 60s and going, look at that old stuff. That wow.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's just crazy that it used to be that bad.
Right.
And then I look at something that I watched as a fan. Like I'm sitting there going,
before,
come on,
in 96?
Yeah.
So Fox had already come on the scene. So
it was on Fox because Madden was calling it.
So the score and the time was a regular key on the screen because that's what Fox brought to the table. That was groundbreaking.
It was always
there,
in the corner.
Because remember, before that, you had to wait.
And it would come up.
Like, who at Fox was like, you know what people want is the score on the screen all the time.
Yeah.
And they're like, I'm sure NFL was like, yeah, that's a good idea. You need to get those guys in network. Get them 40 years deal.
Somebody get CBS on the way.
What the hell were we doing?
Somebody get CBS on the way. Fire Howard Cosell.
Yeah. who has not thought of that? How have we been doing this sport for 40 years and no one's gone, you know what people want is the score.
Nah.
Well, then it doesn't force them to watch it. Yeah, but it doesn't encourage them to change the channel.
Don't you wish that there was a documentary about the guys that that felt that way? Oh, we hit it, but I turned the volume down.
Oh, damn it.
The guys that felt that way but didn't, they argued those great ideas.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like saying that, guys, nobody wants to. Everybody wants to see the beautiful majesty of the shot and the framing. They don't want to know the score. It's not about the score. It's about the drama that's happening within the play. Like, and they're fighting
that's
for
that.
That's
what Moneyball's about, is and those people that cannot shift their paradigm to think of something better.
Right, but that's what I'm saying, is that I want to find out the guys that didn't work out for. You know, even in Moneyball, it didn't really work out for him until later on. You know what I mean?
Still hasn't.
Yeah. So, and I want to know, like, hey, this guy is Jimmy Sampson, and he was the one who was against putting the NFL score. How do you feel now? Like an asshole? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
And they just do a series of those.
I've read a book on that.
I'm going to get a Kickstarter going. We're going to make this movie.
That sounds great. I read a book on a guy that talked about selling your animation script when I was trying to research how to do Sly. And he was the guy that invented the Muppet Babies cartoon. Like, he saw that. So he's talking about
Muppet
inspiration.
Babies.
And he's like, it was a 2-second gag in one of the Muppet movies. And he's like, that could be an animated short. It went on to be one of the very successful.
They make our dreams come true.
Exact 80s cartoons. He said he They pitched Power Rangers to him, and he said, I don't get it. Good luck. Goodbye. He said, to this day, I kick myself. And I was like, I could not wrap my head around that noise, and now it made Fox Kids what it was.
Power Rangers has managed to be a hit without anybody knowing it. That's the other thing that was weird. Like, I remember
strangely enough.
Yeah, like, I remember when I was a kid, like, I felt like it just came on the cusp of our childhood. Like,
we were getting out
of toys, you know?
My friend was like, you could see the Voltron sticker scratched off.
Yeah.
I was like, now I know we're adults because that's pretty cynical.
Yeah. Because, it made us all old men. Like, come on, guys.
That's those commercials for AT&T where they're like, back in my day, you had to sit in the living room to watch television.
And to almost bring us full circle is that I went and was looking for a sweater for my son today, and there's a Voltron shirt that I could get my 4-year-old kid as a t-shirt, and they have like vintage style like Chewbacca references and jokes and everything, and I'm like, how great is it to be able to dress my kid like he's a 22-year-old college sophomore?
You are a first-generation gamer!
Boom! Goes the dynamite. Well, there was our show. Give us a call, 408-228-4911. Send us an email to show@secondfunniestpodcast.com. Also, you can join the conversation at facebook.com/secondfunniestpodcast. Follow us on the Twitter @secondfunniest. But the big thing that everybody must do
right now.
Go to facebook.com/IWantSlyCooper in his own animated series.
Nailed it.
Boom goes the dynamite. Throw a like up there. Tell your grandma. Tell your friends. They're climbing in your window.
See, I was inspired by that song, and that's what made me want to become a musician.
Tell Kelly Clarkson. We need everybody in on this. George Lucas. Can't pull it. All right. Rick Eisner? No, what's the guy that... who was the CEO of Disney that just left?
Eisner.
Michael Eisner.
Yep.
Yeah, there we go. So, on behalf of my good friend Kevin Miller, it's just worth saying, okay, bye.
I love the 90s.